broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to Refresh Your Wealth with yours truly, Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. And yes, you have both of us here. Man, the last 2 weeks, one of us has been on hiatus, a.k.a. vacation, summer break, doing some family time, spending some time with the fam. But Matt Sorensen is here in the house.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's so good to be together. I'm excited for today. You may not believe me, but I actually look forward to this. Every week, just doing this with Mark. It's a blast for us to do. So the privilege is all mine.
Well, thank you. I have to admit that, you know, when you're, for any of you out there that are business owners, and you'll find real quick, it's hard to find time with your business partner to do things. You just get consumed by the business. And the radio show is an opportunity for Matt and I to collaborate, hang out. It is stressful finding topics that we think that you, the listener, will enjoy. but other than that, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Speaking of a topic you're going to enjoy, guys, this week you're going to enjoy it because we're talking about money. And for those of you who own a business, you've thought of this. I know you've thought of this and you probably haven't gotten a good answer. We're going to give it to you today. How do you value your business for sale? How do you price it? It's kind of a mystery, I think, right, Mark? And Mark's been kind of, this is a new chapter in one of his, in his fourth book. He's lapped me three times. he's a very prolific writer. So we're gonna dive into that. It's gonna be an awesome topic today. And as you're gonna see, it's just gonna happen this way. I'm gonna be asking a lot of questions. Mark's gonna be giving a lot of answers, and that's just how it's gonna be.
Oh, well, and which is not always the case. But I've spent a lot of time researching and writing with my new book coming out this fall, The Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom. Yes, announced here first.
Whoa.
Wow. You didn't expect me to come out with that, did you, Matt?
Yeah.
Roll that out. So, yeah, Business Owner's Guide. This book is exclusively for business owners. Well, previously, Matt and I kind of write for investors and the average American that may think of saving taxes or investing or protecting their assets, but no. This book is specifically for business owners. And that topic comes up. There's a whole section on what's my business really worth? And, you know, this is not about how to sell your business today. Just how do you price it? So it's going to be good.
And if you don't price it right, you ain't selling it. Or you're going to leave money on the table one way or the other.
There's going to be a problem one way or another. And there's a lot of techniques to this. Business appraisers. Some of you may not realize there are business appraisers just like home appraisers, which most of us as Americans have dealt with before, but not many of us have talked to a business appraiser. So you want to have your ducks in a row so you don't get hometowned.
I love that. I'm getting hometowned.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know where that came from, but I love it, getting hometowned. That's not when you go to hometown buffet, though, is it? Is that getting hometowned?
That's something else. It's something else.
That's digestive. That's something in your digestive system. That's the problem there. All right.
Go.
Well, thanks everybody for being here. As you guys know, if you've listened to this show before, we talk about saving taxes, protecting your assets, building wealth. And we've got a whole series of podcasts you can find under the Refresh Your Wealth podcast on iTunes or at refreshyourwealth.com, which that's a great website to go to sign up for our free weekly newsletter, get updates on shows, and also get links to our articles, tax tips, deadlines coming up. It's free, so why not go for it? But before we get into the topic today, we got to give a tax or legal tip, give you a little juicy nugget, as we like to call them. You want to go first, Mark, or you want to give me honors?
Sure. No, let's do it. So we're rotating the baton here since we're going to be interviewing. I get to be the guest of the show later. So this is great. Might as well get my tax tip over with. So let's hit it. Tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay, so this is an interesting one that many of you, although you might take, may not take advantage of it, you're going to find this fascinating. I want to talk about the innocent spouse provision when it comes to the IRS. Now,
This isn't OJ, is it?
Yeah, by the way, oh my gosh, I've been getting into the OJ series on Netflix. So good. Oh my gosh. So good. We'll have to talk about OJ another day. He's coming up for parole this year. So we'll have to have an OJ show. We will. In fact, let's do it, Matt.
Let's do it. What can you learn from OJ in your business?
Yeah. Oh, there's lots to learn. Okay, so, but on the innocent spouse provision, many of you not realize that filing a joint married tax return allows you to maximize certain income tax deductions and credits, and typically filing jointly saves you taxes. There's only a few instances when you have two wage earners in the same bracket. If they were filing independently, you may not want to file jointly, but 90% of the time, everybody's going to file a joint return. But did you know each spouse is jointly and severally responsible for any tax, interest, or penalties attributable to the return, which means even if your spouse earned all the money, you're jointly liable to pay the tax if there's tax due. And this liability continues to apply even after a couple divorces. If there's a joint tax return that you filed, then you get divorced, you may think, I'm good, I'm done. If there's some tax owing from when you were married and your spouse didn't pay that tax, but it was money they earned, you could still be on the hook. So this is where the innocent spouse rule comes into play. Now, in order to qualify, there's four boxes you got to check, four criteria that must be met in order to take advantage of the innocent spouse rule, which means, and this usually typically happens after divorce. You get divorced, there's a tax bill, and you get a nasty letter from the IRS. That's when we usually get that call. And if you're still married to someone and you're looking for the innocent spouse provision and your spouse screwed you over on taxes,
They're laying in bed right next to you.
we got bigger issues than the innocent spouse provision. Yeah. So, but here's these four categories. First of all, it had to have been a joint tax return that has an understatement of tax, which is typically the problem. So right off the bat, you've got a tax return where the tax wasn't paid in full. Number two, the understatement of tax must be due to an erroneous item of your spouse. So now what that's defined as any deduction, credit, or tax basis incorrectly stated on the return, as well as any income not reported. Now, that's a bunch of technical verbiage for the fact your spouse cheated on their tax return and something's erroneous. That's kind of a blatant way to say it. Cheat is a very loaded word, but let's just keep it simple. And then number three, you have to establish at the time you signed the joint return that you did not know or have reason to know that there was an understatement. So when you signed it, your spouse puts it on the kitchen table. Hey, you got to sign the tax return. And you sign it. At the time, you had no idea that your spouse was cheating. Again, to use that word loosely. And then number four, taking into account all the facts and circumstances, it would be unfair. Oh, a classic legal word. It would be unfair to hold you liable for the understatement. So if you can prove those four things, you get out of the tax and the IRS is going to go after your spouse if you can prove those four things. So, I mean, I think this is a fascinating tip, Matt, right? I mean, if someone doesn't take advantage of it, I mean, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, well, there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who have to use this every year. This is a very, very common relief mechanism. There's not money in the IRS, and I love that, unfair. I can't tell you how many people when they come to probably every other consult that I talk about taxes, that word comes up. That's not fair. That seems unfair. Yeah, welcome to the tax code. At least that part's probably not going to be hard to push.
Well, Matt, I've got to say, my amazing partner, Matt Sorensen, here on the show, he's got some great quotes that he uses. I quote Matt Sorensen all the time. He was a former prosecutor, for those of you that didn't know. He put tax cheats in jail. He's got some great stories, maybe for another day. But one of the ones is, Matt, you've said before, it's not what is the truth.
Oh, yeah.
It's what you can – you go ahead. You finish that quote.
I mean, this is Tom Cruise, A Few Good Men. I mean, I just borrowed it from him. It doesn't matter what's true. It only matters what I can prove in court. So that's, lessons learned,
Yeah. Oh, and Matt –
Lance Corporal Dawson, he was just like, oh, crap. But it's, Tom Cruise, like, you got to give me some evidence. Doesn't matter. I got to be able to prove it. Anyways.
Corporal Dawson did not like that answer. But even today, in staff meeting today, Matt had another quote. What was it?
Well, this is, this is for those of you that get arrested. There's just another one. It doesn't matter whether you did it or – wait, sorry. Just because you did it doesn't mean you're guilty. Okay.
Bring it back, OJ, again.
Yes. Just because you did it doesn't mean you're guilty. All right. Think about that for a second. There's some criminal defense lawyer that has that as a billboard. It's kind of genius, actually. Because let's be honest, 99 out of 100 of his clients did it.
Which brings
he's targeting
up
his market, Going out, the ones that did it, they need you more, man.
In fact, to quote another movie, we got Lincoln Lawyer, Matthew McConaughey, just wishing he had an innocent client. We should have, Matt, we should have a movie list requirement for all of the listeners of our show that you have to watch these movies in order to participate on our show. Yeah. And Lincoln Lawyer, right there.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, A Few Good Men is pretty critical also.
Civil Action, John Travolta.
So good.
Classic. Yeah. Write these down, folks. Civil Action, John Travolta, when he's driving in his Porsche on his way to his client meeting, talking about the worth of a dead client. What are they worth in court? Oh, yeah.
So good.
Man.
Yeah.
Powerful.
It's very good. Yeah. All right. Well, now you got some movie tips. I'm going to come in with a legal tip and try and keep up here.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Now, those of you who've been following Bitcoin, I've been geeked out on Bitcoin the last couple of weeks, if you haven't noticed, all right? I've got a newsletter article that's going to come out next week on using IRAs to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, and he's got a tip on Area 51. But go ahead with Bitcoin first. Go ahead.
That's right. That's right. It does exist. I saw Independence Day on 4th of July, if you recall. There was aliens at Area 51, okay? Will Smith was there. It happened, okay?
Footnote.
Okay, now Bitcoin. Okay, Mark, you may have been crapping on this in 2011 when Bitcoin was 30 cents for one Bitcoin. Do you know how much one Bitcoin goes for right now?
I did not know.
$2,500.
What?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
You wish you bought a bunch of Bitcoin back in Area 51 in 2011, didn't you?
Okay. I just have a problem with the name, a Bitcoin. I want a full coin. Why do I have to have a Bitcoin?
I don't know. There's Litecoin. There's a bunch out there.
Why don't they just print some more Bitcoin? Just print some more.
$2,400? That's the trick. You don't print more. You don't make more. It's a finite amount. If you don't know what Bitcoin is, we did an article. It was on the newsletter last week. It's at KQSLawyers.com. Kevin Kennedy did it in our office just on what the heck is Bitcoin and virtual currency. But we've been getting a lot of questions about this lately as Bitcoin's rising in value. And a lot of people are like, well, why don't I invest in this? So we've had a lot of clients ask, can I use my IRA to do this? Now, we've done some background research. And the short answer is yes. Essentially, IRAs are only restricted in certain things they can invest in. So as long as it's an investment, your IRA can own it, unless it's specifically excluded. The things specifically included are collectible items and life insurance. So Bitcoin is not specifically excluded. In fact, in the 70s, when the rules on IRAs came out, there's no way in heck they were even thinking about Bitcoin or virtual currency, so they couldn't have restricted it. And the IRS hasn't restricted it. So it is a viable investment to own in your IRA. Now, there's some practical ways about how to do it. In short, we recommend an IRA LLC. You have to get what's called a wallet to own Bitcoin. That's the most efficient way to do it for an IRA, with a company called Coinbase. They're the major exchange, essentially a marketplace for buying and selling Bitcoin for investment. There's going to be an article coming up next week on this, and also a video from me on owning Bitcoin in your IRA. But I want to give that quick tip out to those of you first here on the Refresh Your Wealth Show. You heard it here first.
Man, Matt, that was a great – a virtual currency, man, as if our life didn't have enough virtual aspects to it.
I know.
Now I've got virtual currency.
You know, and it uses, you know, the more and more I look into it, it's something you want to research. There's obviously, I'm not saying whether you should or shouldn't invest in Bitcoin. I'm just saying you can. You know, you can also eat a pizza for every meal, you know. And so, I'm just saying you can. Okay. But it's very interesting. I think it's very future forward. And you think about financial services and where it was 30 years ago till now. It's very interesting to see kind of the people that have been behind it too. There's been a lot of venture capital behind it. Even Fidelity, their CEO is very, very interested and positive on virtual currency. Whereas some of the other banks have kind of been crapping on it, but, I just wanted you guys to know about it. And we know we've been getting lots of questions on it, so I'm trying to give you some straightforward answers.
Well, and I'll say this in summary, for any of you that are a regular listener of our show and invest your IRA, 401k, retirement account, self-directing is a huge strategy that we're advocates of. If you're a new listener to our show, please get to some of our prior shows. But truly, no bones about it, my amazing partner, Matt Sorensen, is the national expert on the legal strategies of what you can do with an IRA, what's prohibited, what's not. And trust me, your stockbroker is not on the same page as Matt Sorensen. There are strategies out there that will blow your mind. So if you want to invest your IRA, get a consult with Matt or a couple of his little associates that are mini Matts that are amazing. You can always talk to the team. So give us a call. Anyway, sorry, little shameless plug there.
Yeah.
Matt, if I may. Is that all right?
Hey, that's, you know. It was tastefully done. Tastefully done.
Thank you. All right. Well, are you going to introduce your guest?
Yeah, folks, I want to welcome to the show Mark Jolly Kohler, the man, Woo! The myth, the legend, the surfer, you know, scoutmaster, husband, father, author,
wow,
lawyer,
I gotta
CPA.
Meet this guy.
Oh. Just, you know, all around good guy. Also, probably the best dressed guy in Rexburg, Idaho. Can I just say?
Woo!
What are those pants I saw you're wearing today? What color are those?
That's a good question.
Salmon?
Salmon. There you go. It's salmon. That you hit it. Boy, Skype was looking good today. Yeah, salmon. You know, you don't wear salmon-colored pants on Main Street of Rexburg, Idaho. You might get ran over by a four-wheeler. So some guy's like, well, city slicker newing on our town. Anyway, I moved out here to slow down my life just a tad on the evenings and weekends, folks. Love Idaho. I was camping this weekend. It's good. It's good. Good for the soul. Okay, so topic today.
Okay, well, Mark, now as we prefaced earlier today, we're going to be talking about how to value your business. As I said before, any of you that are business owners, I don't care whether you're wanting to sell right now. This is so important to know. Also know where you're going. You know, I think a lot of people out there are, as business owners, this is something you're building and spending a lifetime doing in many instances. And what's it going to be worth? And Mark's going to give us some metrics here. So, Mark, what do we need to know first when we get started on this?
I know you're going to have some sidebar comments with all of this, Matt, because I know you consult with so many business owners. Mm-hmm. And the talking about my book that's coming out this fall, that's for another day. There is some really insightful, really, and I say that humbly. I've had a lot of contributors help give me some insight on this new book. But literally, chapter 2 of the book, and this is the basis of our conversation today, is the misconception that many business owners have as to the value of their business. Now, let me give you a couple reasons why. There's two reasons why so many business owners think their business is worth more than it really is. So here's your intervention, folks. I know you. Yeah, this is your reality check. And I hate to say this. This is a good shocker for you, because I want to give you some practical tips today on how to improve the value of your business. But many of you think, hey, my business is worth $1 million, or my business is worth, you know, I could sell it for 500 grand or whatever. Yeah, right. Because what someone's willing to pay for and what you think it's worth are two different things. And there's two reasons why. Number one, it's emotional. Number one is it's emotional. You have poured blood, sweat, and tears into your business for years. I know you have. I've done the same thing. And you think there's a value to that. I hate to tell you, there's not. It's what your business can make in the future. And that's hard. It's hard to say. Many business owners want to sell their business to get paid back for all that blood, sweat, and tears. I mean, Matt, I know you consult with clients that constantly think, how am I going to get my money back for all this?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's like, look at all, everything I've sacrificed or everything I put in over time, you know, or, you know, the low salary I've taken to just reinvest profit back into the business that I could have otherwise taken out. Well, that doesn't matter. What's it going to make next month after you sell and you're not there anymore?
Doesn't mean anything to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm your buyer. Now, second reason, Matt, tell me what you think of this. Second reason that I really talk a lot about in this chapter of the book is, you know your business's potential more than anyone else. You know what your business can do in the future. And again, you want to sell your business to someone and tell them all these great things of what your business can make. But again, does that translate into a dollar value today? And it's hard, because I know the potential of my business. I am so excited for the future of my business. But can I put a value on that? And you can to some degree. A buyer may see that, but a lot of times we think it's worth, again, more than it really is.
Yeah. And I think you're probably into metrics maybe in some of these valuation techniques on, there may be certain businesses that you can kind of, that you're going to get more of a multiplier for, or that, you know, based on your revenue, because it may be seen as a more high growth industry. Or something to that effect. So, I mean, if you own a bunch of Blockbuster videos, you know, that's no one's going to buy into the fact that that's going to go up in value. That's probably a terrible example because I don't even know if those exist anymore. But you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, where was I? I've got to have to remember this. I'll remember it before the end of the show. It'll come to me. But I was driving with my wife somewhere, it was in the last month, and there was a video rental store. And I was like, what? We got to pull over and take a picture of this. Where was it? I'll remember it. But how cool is that? I remember back in the day on a Friday night, you'd go to the video rental store, and it took you an hour to get out of there because you'd see all your friends, and you're like, hey, what's up? And you're like walking around. That was half the fun, walking around, figuring out what movie you're
going to rent. What's the new release? Oh, is it already all checked out? Those were the good old days. All right.
Okay. Now I want to make one more point before we get into valuation, and that is another major mistake. This wasn't one of my two reasons, but I highlight this in the chapter. A major mistake entrepreneurs make is they think that their business model, product or service, will essentially be the same today, tomorrow, and forever. And we have to realize that a market, an industry, can change on a dime. And when you go to value a business, a buyer is really trying to anticipate the risk of what your business could look like 2 years, 3 years from now. I'll just give an example here, and I hate to say this because we do have a lot of listeners from the real estate industry, but let's just talk about realtors. What does the future hold for realtors? It's questionable. I mean, you've got Zillow and a lot of people doing for sale by owner more than ever before. In some states now, more than 50% of listings are for sale by owner through these online portals, and the realtor, what role are they playing in the future? That can change. You know, what is a brokerage worth today? Is it going to be worth as much next year or the year after? You know, these are hard questions. So anyway, when you think about your business, you have to think about that product or service and what could change regulatory in regulation and laws, a terrorist attack, in inventions, competitors, and the web. Could the web take your business out of the picture? That's happened. I mean, how many businesses have just literally disappeared because of the web? Mm-hmm. Now with that in mind, when you go to value and price your business, now we're not going to get into NDAs or non-disclosure agreements and disclosure and the process. I'm not talking about the process today. And even once you do come up with an agreement for the sale of your business, what are the steps that are typical and legal strategies? Are you going to do an asset sale or a stock sale? Not talking about that. I'm just talking about, how do you arrive at that price? Now, this is what I mentioned earlier on in the show. You're going to use a person or a company at some point. It's called a business appraiser. And a business appraisal is just as typical as a home appraisal. They're expensive. You're going to spend a few thousand dollars. But even if you're going to sell the business to family, even if you're going to sell the business to an employee or a partner, it could be an internal transaction. There could be a lot of debate as to the value of your business, and you're going to want to get an appraisal. Now, when they do an appraisal, and they're going to usually take a blend of three or four methods, and so there's not just like a blue book value. You just don't go on a, you know, on a website and go, "What's my business worth?" You know, it's a car wash in the, you know, this county of Seattle, or so it must be, or King County, you know, whatever. But there's just no website that tells you the value of your business. So what an appraiser does is take a snapshot. Now, Matt, this is very common. You deal with this a lot because you have to appraise IRAs, because that's an annual requirement. So I'm going to put you on the spot here for a minute. Just tell us, an appraisal is subjective, right? Can you explain that? Like, why an appraiser is not, if an appraisal is not a scientific, it's exact price that could one person might find versus another.
Yeah. So it really depends on the type of business. You know, for a lot of appraisals for IRAs, it may be just asset based. My IRA owns an LLC. The LLC owns real property. And so in that case, we're just going to look at, all right, what are those properties worth? And then we're going to add those together to determine then what's left in the LLC bank account. And you just really kind of add up what the value of the assets are. That's for like kind of an asset entity, which is one of the most common for IRAs. But, you know, let's say my IRA owns ownership in a, you know, a restaurant, an operating business. Okay, that's not really asset based. I mean, they probably lease the building, they may have some equipment, but what is that worth? How do we value that? Well, now we're going to look at an income approach. Maybe we're going to look at what is the income of the business now, and what's the profit margin there. What's their industry? And that helps kind of create a valuation. There's lots of other methods. One distinction I want to say is, you know, think of asset based for like your real estate or holdings, but then operating businesses, which is more of what we're talking about today, what you're talking about, Mark, and selling a business, is totally different ballgame.
Yeah, it is. But I think the point that I was trying to make by putting you on the spot, Matt, is that I know Matt goes through the process of valuing an IRA, and another company may come up with a different value, higher or lower. Sure. It's a very subjective analysis. It's very factor-based. And sometimes in a big business sale, we'll see a couple appraisals, and they'll take an average between the two. So the first point is, I just don't want any of you listening here to think, oh, well, there's an exact price for my business. Well, there's not, because there's factors, you know, the risk, the future, the industry, all those sorts of things. So with that said, Matt highlighted two just in his little comment there. So the four that I want to mention today is the multiple of cash flow method. So that's kind of looking at that income approach that Matt alluded to. So it's called a multiple of cash flow method. Number two is the balance sheet method, which Matt referenced as looking at assets. We'll go through these a little more in detail. Number three is the cost to create method. And then number four is the capitalized earnings approach method. Now, that's a mouthful, capitalized earnings approach method, which is another income type analysis. But let's go through these for a minute. I think this is interesting. And many of you are going to hear some terms here that you have got to know. If you're going to value your business, you've got to be fluent in some of these. And here's the first one, EBITDA. It sounds like a foreign language. Like, EBITDA. Yeah. Okay, now that EBITDA is E as in echo, B as in boy. Oh, well, here, I'll use the right words. Sorry. Rather, I was going to say it's an acronym, and what it stands for is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. So it's this definition of earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Again, a mouthful, but basically what you're doing is you're subtracting expenses from revenue and just exclude interest, taxes, and those paper and kind of those book entries like depreciation and amortization. What you're trying to peel back is, what is the real cash flow of this business? Yeah. What's the income on a daily basis, and then the hard expenses?
Yeah, that's for any business owner. That's what you're trying to grow every day, right? I mean, the cash flow. You're trying to build more cash flow that makes more take-home pay for any owner, And that's what anyone buying the business wants. Anyone that's going to be a shareholder.
Now I'll correct you though, Matt, because again, we're going to come to option two, which is asset based. There are buyers out there that your business could be losing money, but they want the land under your business. Mm. And some of you may have a business that's not doing great financially. Yeah.
But to me, you're selling real estate. You're not selling business.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, and I go through this, you know, and I'm not trying to, you know, argue with you, Matt, here per se. But I am saying there's a lot of people that look at a business for its brand, its intangible asset, its IP, intellectual property, its machinery that's been tooled in a specific way, and the building, the real estate, the location. So again, now we're going to come to method two here in a moment. But I started with number one because I do agree with Matt. What is this business making cash flow wise? But let's not forget that there could be some assets that are where income is irrelevant.
Yeah.
And so there are those two valuations, and that's why an appraiser will look at a blend of these, and they'll say, what is this business really worth? So okay, now we got to stay with the EBITDA. We got to stay with EBITDA here for a minute, because here's another term that all of you need to learn. It's called normalized EBITDA, because you're going to say, here's my cash flow, and they're going to go, okay, prove it. And you're going to go, well, here's my tax return. Well, does your tax return reflect your cash flow? No, you've been writing off your kids on payroll and all these, you know, cell phone and home office and travel and all these killer KKOS and K&E tax strategies, right? We've been teaching all these great write-offs. And you show your tax return to a buyer, they're going to go, man, you're not making any money. You're like, oh yeah, but my accountants made my tax return look awesome for the IRS, but it looks terrible for a buyer.
Yeah.
And so what you have to do is normalize your financials, which means we're going to do some add backs. We're going to look at excess compensation, rental expenses, owner benefits that are not required for the business, but were a tax write-off. Legitimately with the IRS, but the new buyer may not have a 12-year-old they're going to have empty in the trash on Friday nights, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's called normalized EBITDA. So when you start to go through the multiple cash flow method, you have to start with what is cash flow and that normalization.
Yeah. What about like the salary, you know, and focusing, and I had a client wanting to buy a business that we were looking at the financials. And the owner of that business worked in it day to day. You know, this is an operating business, but they didn't take a salary, or if they took a salary, it was very nominal. So they were just sucking out the profit. And so the financials looked a little bit better than they would. But one of the comments I had to the client wanting to buy the business is, you may just be buying a job, buddy, because this guy's not paying himself a salary, so you got to take that into account when you're valuing this from buyer's perspective. And so, when you're looking at the valuing the business, how does the salary look? If someone's taking a huge salary, or they're taking too low of a salary?
Yeah, no, exactly, Matt. It's very smart of you to think of that, because in my book here, in this chapter, I look at what do you add back to EBITDA that would make things look better. And what do you subtract from EBITDA?
Yeah.
And one of my bullet points is additional salaries required when the owner departs. That's literally one of my bullet points. So Matt, you zoomed right in on it. Because if you're a buyer of a business, you have to look at, how is this business gonna run when the owner leaves? How much is it gonna cost me? Now maybe on the books he's overpaid, or maybe on the books he's underpaid.
Yeah.
And so as a buyer, you've gotta be thinking, how much is it gonna cost me to replace the owner? Now if we think through this, this gets to the next topic or chapter in my book, literally, of how do you increase the value of your business now? And you start to, and I'll just give you just a precursor, you start to increase the value of your business by systemization. How can you systemize your business where it can run and create cash flow without you? Because once that business is self-sustainable without you there every day holding everybody's hand and blowing their nose for them and blah, 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 now, how much more valuable is that business to a buyer, right?
Yeah.
And too many people don't step back. They get sucked into the day-to-day operations of their business. They don't look at the big picture and look at it from a buyer's perspective. You could be hurting your business by working too much in the business. Mm-hmm. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. Even if you like it. For a lot of people, they want to, you know, systemize things so they don't have to show up every day and work, you know, 50, 60 hours a week. But But a lot of clients, frankly, they like that. They just like being involved in their business. That's why they became a business owner. They love being in control of things, even if they're there all the time. But if you're going to sell it, you got to solve that problem, right? Yeah. That's a really, really good insight. That's interesting.
It is. And as you start to think of how to increase the value of your business, you have to look at it from a buyer's perspective. So now, okay, so that first method, back to that, multiple of cash flow method. So the first thing is, what's my cash flow? And then I have to normalize it.
Yeah.
You know, what is that real cash flow? Peeling away the onion. What is that real cash flow? And then I get to multiply it because you get to capitalize on the cash flow. If your business, for example, is making now let me say the multiple. Average small businesses trade for between 3 to 5 times the EBITDA. So that's 3 to 5 times the annual cash flow. So if this business is making $400,000 a year, so after you peel away all the crap and you add back what you need to and take away what you have to and you come up with normalized earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, EBITDA, and you've got that number, and let's say it's $400,000, and based on the fact that you're industrious, stable, and strong, it's not risky, you get a higher multiple, maybe 5. So if I get a multiple of 5 times $400,000, then my business is worth $2 million. Because someone can say, hey, if I go buy this business within 4 years, I paid it off. Now, if I buy it, I can do some other things. Usually a buyer has an idea to take the business to the next level. So they're willing to pay a certain base rate. And if they know that they can pay it off in 4 or 5 years, then because they've got a multiple of 5 in that instance, I said 4, apologize for that, but a multiple of 5, now I've got my price. Mm-hmm. So that's that multiple map you were talking about earlier.
Now, I love you kind of alluded to some of the tips you have for preparing for sell. So if I'm a business owner, let's say I got a retail store, okay? Can I maybe help myself by starting to create a website, having an online presence? I mean, do those things help when like an appraiser is looking at it to maybe give you a 4 multiple instead of a 3? If you can show and demonstrate that you're on the cutting edge in whatever industry you may be.
Absolutely. And that's where the future of your business will help you get a higher multiple because you want to show stability and potential and growth and all these things. So you can tell someone, hey, I want you to pay 3-4 times my annual earnings because you're going to get that money back. And, and what's interesting here, Matt, is that when I've met with so many clients that say, hey, I want to sell my business, and they get an appraisal. Oh, is that a brutal intervention? Because the appraiser comes in here and goes, well, look at this sucks here. This sucks here. Look at your normalized price. You look at your normalized this. Your tax returns are jacked up. Your books are, and they're like, you're only worth this. And they go, oh, but the ancillary benefit is all of the sudden they go, huh. So if I can tweak A, B, C, D, and E, you'll give me a higher appraisal? Sure. But you got to do these 4 things. So a lot of business owners get that fresh look and go, hey, if I could take the next 2 years and get my crap together, I can get the value I want. And a lot of business owners get that energy back. They get rejuvenated. They're like, oh my gosh, I can get that 2 million. I just got to get things dialed in. And I'll give one of the big takeaways here today is if you want to sell your business, start now, because it's usually about a 2-year process to get ready.
Yeah.
Because you got to have your crap together.
They're going to want like 2 years of financials and tax returns? Is that kind of why you say 2 years?
Well, that's a part of it. You want to have a good track record that you can support with bank statements and QuickBooks and tax returns. But also that 2 years gives you the chance to get a better marketing plan, get on the web, get the systemization in place. Get rid of those crappy employees you know you need to get rid of. And systemize yourself out of the business, right? And it takes a couple of years. When you start looking at those hard issues of your business, and if I was a third-party buyer, would I want this? And you go, I gotta clean the shop up. I need to paint this. I need a new sign. I need this. You know, and all of a sudden, you start looking like a buyer. Hey, it takes, 12, 18, 24 months. Oh, now you invite the appraiser back.
Yeah. Love it. I think you know, for those of you who've owned a business for a lot of years, there's kind of stages of this, and you get excited to start the business, make it profitable, grow it. But I think a lot of small or medium-sized businesses, I don't want to say they get in a rut, but they get comfortable. You're making good enough, you're making great money as a business owner. You may have control of things in your life, and this is a good opportunity to really cash in. And I think knowing this, how it gets priced on the front end, as Mark said, and I think getting someone in early, maybe a couple years, is great advice, because then it gives you something to work for. Now you're kind of, as you said, Mark, reinvigorated. You got a task list, and this is going to really impact what type of money you can make as you exit and sell. Love it.
Yeah, so powerful. Now, second method, which we've already talked about indirectly and made a couple notes about, was the balance sheet method. So now we're looking away from income and a multiple. Now we're looking at what are the hard assets of the business. And like I said, it's not just land. You know, it's intellectual property. Have you got your trademarks dialed in? Mm-hmm. Is it time to file for that patent? You know, and again, if you're preparing to sell, is my client list tight? Do I have all of my customer information the way I think I do? Because when a buyer comes in and goes, hey, show me your customer list. Oh, I got a file cabinet over here, and I got this, you know, old daytimer program here, you know, and well, what's the pie, you know?
Daytimer. You know. Oh, that's a blast from the past.
Woo! Throwing out some 90s there, baby. But the point is you want, if your business is not strong income-wise, who knows what you're sitting on? And a lot of people may want that brand, that name, that machinery, that equipment, that IP. And that's going to be a part of the value. And this is now a little insight here for those of you out there looking to buy a business. I mean, this is what, you know, those turnaround kings do. This was what Mitt Romney was famous for. Mitt Romney and his team at Bain Capital in Boston would go in and see a business and that hidden value. And they would be accused of, you know, going in and, you know, chopping off employee ranks and firing people. But they would twist the business around to show its real value and then turn around and resell it and make a more powerful and stronger business afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so as a buyer, you might see value in a business that the seller doesn't even see. And that gives you power and insight.
But from the seller side here, if we're talking to sellers, be your own turnaround guy, right?
Yeah,
do these things that add value first yourself.
Yeah.
Get a couple years under your belt and then sell.
Hey, Matt, there's an article for you. Be your own turnaround guy. Turnaround king.
Yeah.
Be your own turnaround king. Ooh, that was good. Okay. Now, number three, cost to create method. Now I'm going to give a disclaimer because someone's listening to the show that is a business appraiser and they're probably going, Kohler, you're killing it. You know, you're brutalizing this topic. You're an idiot. You don't know what you're doing. Fine, whatever. I'm not a business appraiser. I get it. But I do need to disclaim. There are probably 7, 8, 9 methods of how to value a business. I'm hitting the top four. I think these are the top four most typically used. So I'm going to hit number three here, cost to create method. Now, there's a time when a buyer will purchase a business simply to avoid the difficulties of starting a new business from scratch. They'll say, I want to be in this industry. I want a business, but I don't want to just take 3 years to get there. I want to buy it right now. And that's a value, because you can say from an opportunity cost, what would it cost me to build the building, hire the employees and get there in 3 years? Who knows? Would I be there or not? What's the market share look like? And so why not just go buy if you want a sandwich shop, why not just go buy one down the street and make it better? You could be in business a month from now rather than trying to build a sandwich shop from scratch. So it's the cost to create method. Yeah. And you can put a dollar to that. You can really
You can build your own, have it your way, the blimpy way, Mike's way, whatever, you know, so however you like it.
That's right. So, you know, And sometimes as a buyer, when you're going to value your business at the table negotiating, you can say, hey, look at how much it's going to cost you to go create what I've created. And see, as a buyer, that can be a powerful negotiating tool, because you can say, you just can't do what I do. Let me tell you how hard it was to get here. And that can really help you at the table negotiating, where a buyer goes, oh, okay, seller, you got a point. I didn't realize that was that hard, you know?
Yeah.
And And so there's, and anyway, okay, now number four. Number four, we'll finish with this, is the capitalized earnings approach method. Now, this is what, this has a lot of terms. You think of ROI, return on investment, cash on cash return, cap rates. What this is about is, or even IRR, internal rate of return. What you're, what a lot of buyers will do, and this is your more hedge fund or industry type buyer, where they'll come in and they'll say, I want to buy your business. How much do you make? And then they say, what's my rate of return going to be? I'm going to invest $1 million. I need to make at least 10% on that. Is your cat, is your EBITDA going to get me 10%? And
this would be like a private equity firm coming to buy your business is what they're going to look at.
That's right. Private equity is looking at a rate of return. They may not care what the multiple is. They may not care what the balance sheet looks like. They just say, hey, if I'm going to buy this for X, you better be able to give me Y. And I want to see 8%, 10%, 15%. And they're going to have benchmarks that work for them. And so this capitalized earnings approach method is out there. And an appraiser is going to use that. And they're going to say, under this method, here's how much your business is worth. And you may go, ugh, well, that sucks. You know, I don't know. You know, and so you want to, you know, but that's going to be on the table. And again, in the end, at the end of the day, an appraiser is going to look at a blend of these and show the buyer, show the seller. And then that's when the negotiating begins.
Yeah. All right, so, Mark. Well, yeah, I love that. Well, tell me, timing-wise, you talked about kind of 2 years. I mean, what information do I need to have to get this valuation done? What should I be prepared with? What's the appraiser going to ask for that I need to be, that I need to have on hand?
Okay. Well, and I mentioned this at the beginning. Some of the process, which is kind of separate from the method, but the process is the first thing I'm going to mention it right now. Is that you're going to have to go through a disclosure process. What are my tax returns? What do my books look like? My intellectual property.
Yeah, I'm just saying with the appraiser, not necessarily what the buyers are saying. I'm just saying,
No.
What does the appraiser need from me to do this?
Well, no, this is it. This is it. Okay. This really is. Because I, and I've sat at the table where these appraisers, will they'll say, I want to see it all. You know, show me your client list. They're going to walk your property. They're going to interview employees.
Sure, yeah.
They're going to come out and see what's going on because they want to be as accurate as possible. Now, the more you pay, the better the appraisal. And a buyer may even share the cost of that appraisal, especially if it's an employee, a partner, a family member. They're going to say, hey, I'll chip in. Let's get an appraiser in here and let's find out what this is worth. So they're going to look at financial statements, obviously, financials, the books, tax returns. But they also want to see the client list. The machinery, the product, the service, the website, they're going to go through everything. And this is why tightening up the books in advance, taking that time to really have your stuff together is so powerful. But Matt, I was going to say this too. So that disclosure, that word disclosure, this is where the NDA comes in. Anybody that's going to look at your business, even an appraiser, they're going to sign a brutal, well-written non-disclosure agreement. So that's called the NDA. I go through that for 2 or 3 pages in my book. Being prepared to talk about this. You don't want a buyer to come steal your ideas and thoughts. And so you've got to be very careful of who you share that information with, the appraiser, the buyers, and have an NDA. Mm. And anybody signs that before they look at anything.
God, well, you know, we always deliver with excellent guests here on the Refresh Your Wealth Show. And today we succeeded once again. All right, so
That's nice.
Thanks for being a host and guest today, Mark. And thanks for everyone for being here this week. We'll be back, of course, next week with another amazing episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Mark, since you were the guest here, you got some final words for everybody?
Well,
do you want to be host now?
No, I will be guest. Matt, thank you. Those were very, very kind and great questions. Many of you may think Matt and I rehearse or have a script or not a script, but, you know, kind of a layout. A lot of time we're just shooting from the hip here. Those were great questions. I'm grateful to be here with you. And I just want to, I guess I'd say in sum again, for the business owners out there, think long term. Think 2-3 years down the road. You're not going to just put your business up for sale tomorrow. Think of it just like your home. If you're going to sell your home, you're going to go out and work on the yard. You're going to paint the house. You're going to stage it. You're going to get your furniture fixed up, cleaned up. Same thing with your business. You want buyers to walk through your business and go, huh, I can see myself living here. what's this going to look like? So take the time to prep it, and it doesn't happen overnight, and that's okay. So Matt, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, the pleasure is all mine. Well, if you like the show, guys, head on over to iTunes, give us a 5-star review. We'll be reading some next week on the show. And of course, if you give us a 5-star review, send Mark and I an email at MAT or MARK at kkoslawyers.com. You get to pick a free copy of my book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook, or Mark's book, The Tax and Legal Playbook. And we ship it out to you for free as our way to say thanks for giving us a 5-star review. If you don't want to give a 5-star review, then just don't give any review. So we only accept 5 stars. All right. Thanks for being with us. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.